If you talk to my CEO, he will say, we're not an energy company. We're more of a technology company than an energy company. And for listeners that think about energy as being kind of this staid industry, and for me coming into it, it is that the rate of transformation and change is truly incredible, even in the 4.5 years I've been here.
You're tuned in to the Data Masters podcast. In each episode, we dissect the complexities of data management and discuss the data strategies that fuel innovation, growth, and efficiency. We speak with industry leaders who share how their modern approaches to data management help their organizations succeed. Let's dive straight into today's episode with Anthony Dayton.
Welcome back to Data Masters. Today, we're tackling a concept that's often thrown around as a buzzword, digital transformation. But we're going to peel back the layers and explore what it means in the raw, real-world reality of a sector you might least expect, energy. We'll explore how a major player, NRG Energy, is fundamentally transforming itself, partly through a bold move, the acquisition of Vivint Smart Home. And this isn't just about an acquisition, adding in a new service. It's about an established energy company embracing a digital native strategy, leveraging data, and fundamentally changing how it interacts with its customers. It's a fascinating example of how a large infrastructure-focused enterprise is actively innovating and disrupting its own business model. Leading much of this fascinating shift and bringing a truly unique perspective is our guest today, Dak Leonardi. Dak's professional background is particularly interesting because, as you'll hear in a moment, it involves experience in highly customer-centric industries like hospitality and retail before he transitioned into the energy sector. And it raises an important question: what does it take to inject that customer first mindset, often seen as a hallmark of the hospitality and retail industries, into an industry that's historically been driven by large scale generation and delivery? We'll also delve into Dak's insights on the role of AI in this energy revolution. So let's get ready to deep dive into digital transformation and disruptive technology as we welcome Dak to Data Masters. Welcome.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you for having me.
So maybe we start, before we dig into the details of digital transformation, listeners may not be intimately familiar with NRG and the business, and maybe just share a little bit about the history of the company and also your personal history in engaging the business.
Yes, sure. So NRG is a Fortune 500 company. We have about 16,000 employees across our organization. NRG now is more than ever focused on technology. That ranges everything from generation of electricity. So we have 24 plants across the US that generate about 13.4 gigawatts of generation capacity. So we generate an electron. We have many brands in deregulated markets where we will sell that electron. So think of that in terms of some of the Northeast areas and in Texas where the market is deregulated. And that's both in terms of commercial and industrial brands or companies and also residential. And then we manage an electron. So we bought a company called Vivint, which is a smart home company. So we see the whole ecosystem from that generation of electron to selling the electron to then managing that electron in the home through smart devices. And just to give you context in terms of our residential footprint, we're in about 8 million households across the US.
So yeah, and very much to where I started, NRG is about creating, moving, and distributing electrons. And most energy companies, or I think the layman's understanding of the energy industry, is that it's a heavily regulated industry. It's largely about standing up power plants and thinking about, like, literally, how do you create energy in an electron? And yet your history and background is very much not that. So maybe, again, briefly just share a little bit about your background and why it may not have been necessarily an obvious move for you to jump to NRG.
Yeah, sure. So my background is really a lot of my time in the retail space, in grocery retail, where customer data was critical to customer strategies, whether it be better ads, better communications, pricing, ranging in a store. So I spent a lot of my career there. Went to Hilton as their chief data and analytics officer to set up that function so we could start to understand from a hospitality perspective how to improve customer experience, guest experiences. And then I had a conversation with NRG that was really on the journey of improving the customer experience and driving that through better understanding, better data strategies. And so hence I joined NRG just under 5 years ago.
So let's sort of put these two ideas together. And you mentioned the acquisition of Vivint Smart Home. That to me feels like a pretty interesting strategic move. And if I could step back, the business challenge NRG faces is how to transform the business, how to become a digital first business. And that's really a disruptive change in the context, moving from the core strategy being about these physical assets to the digital experience. And you use an acquisition, in this case, Vivint, to, I think, kickstart that digital transformation, bring in fresh talent, fresh thinking, and a bunch of probably, I would imagine, very useful technology with regard to that. And this is a common pattern we see when a business wants to disrupt itself, it uses M&A and an acquisition as a mechanism of spearheading. Is that what was going on under the covers here at NRG? Or maybe talk through the question of how to disrupt an established business, but also what role acquisitions play. And then we can dig into a little bit of detail around, you know, how Vivint helps in a very practical sense.
If I look at NRG's vision, we really want to deliver the best energy and smart home products and services that transform the customer experience. And to your point, we as an energy company have those big generation capabilities. We have that ability to sell electricity and power and gas as well. But as we think about the home and the electrification of the home, and it's becoming more and more, and the demand is becoming more and more, it's a really good and a synergistic way of thinking about the final mile, the last mile, in terms of that managing of electrons, and certainly in terms of peak demand, how we can be much more strategic and much more responsive to our customer needs in terms of how we think about load within the grid, load within the home, what that does in terms of how we make that better experience in terms of services, products, or even pricing for our customers. And that's based on that data. And if you think about it, that ecosystem is a lot, that value chain, we have data all the way across from how we generate that electron to how it is consumed in the home. And joining that up is truly enlightening. And it's not just the acquisition. We've created adjacent partnerships, strategic partnerships with other companies so we can leverage not just the capabilities that we have, but capabilities like the thermostats, like Nest, which we can talk about later, and be truly able to think about the grid and think about the efficiency of the grid. And one of the things that, you know, it may sound a bit strange from an energy company, but the cleanest megawatt is a megawatt we don't use. So the whole strategy there is how do we become intelligent around reducing some of that potential wastage and being more efficient?
So if I put words in your mouth for a second, the Vivint acquisition was about extending your data reach closer to the actual point of consumption, to the real experience the customer's having on a day-to-day basis with their home, their energy usage, the appliances they have, and it allowed you to create this end-to-end data experience. I mean, clearly you had a lot of great data about generation. Now you had a lot of very rich data about consumption. Is that a fair way of framing it?
Yeah, because ultimately we want to be driving smart energy usage, certainly as we think about the demand that is we see in our markets today, and we'll see more and more. And I'm sure the listeners and you have many things about AI and data centers and the demand that we'll see in the future. So we have to be much more intelligent as an energy company around how we manage that consumption and that generation.
If you don't mind, for those of us who don't work in the energy industry, like in a way, we're all good consumers. Like we know what it means to turn on our lights and run our washing machine, charge our cars. But maybe share a little bit about the practical side of this. You're collecting an enormous amount of really rich information and data, again, across the value chain. But what does this look like in practice? How would I experience this as a consumer? And how would you as a business experience it from a business perspective?
As a consumer, we'll start with that. It's really around a few things. If I think about data and the use of data in personalization, understanding, letting a customer know their consumption, predicting what their consumption is going to be so they can better plan in terms of usage over the hotter months of the year. Certainly in Texas, when the HVACs kind of kick in and energy consumption is used a lot, just even we've done things like using a customer data platform to inform customers in terms of, are you actually on the right plan? Because it's so easy for a customer to pick a plan, and because there are a lot of different plans, and then not be on the right plan based on usage. So using that data to actually understand and help that customer understand, are they on the right plan? What's their usage like? What's their projected usage like? So that's one part of it. And then as we think about energy consumption, and you know, this is partly today and partly tomorrow. If you think about when the grid is being used a lot in those heavy days of hot weather, yes, we can, with our partnership with Renew Home, we can start to help try and manage the kind of cycles in terms of cooling in a home and do it much more. You know, it's not, hey, it's hot, let's just turn it up 3 more degrees. Let's use data to be much more intelligent on how we know the weather is going to come and how we make it so you don't see that. But in the future, we should think more about microshifting. Your refrigerator uses a lot of power, but it doesn't necessarily need to use all that power all the time. So how can you microshift? And as you think about all the renewable technologies that are coming in, how can I really start to make your home more economical as I think about solar, battery, and grid? And so there are different times that it would make more sense to use different sources of power. And that's driven by understanding a lot of the sensors and the data to create that ecosystem in the home that will be much more intelligent around smart energy.
Let's dig into that a little bit, because I think that's exactly the connection and relevant point here, which is, it's really about the data. And I think, again, historically, we might have thought about an energy company. It's like, it's really about how do I generate electrons at a lower cost or move them around efficiently. If, again, your point is, no, it's about really understanding all of the data about all of the points of consumption, generation, movement, sources. But share a little bit about how this impacts your data strategy and really this data perspective on it.
Yeah, so as I think about the data strategy and when I joined the company, what was clear was, to your point, we have a lot of data. We have so much data, but it actually works in silos. Like a lot of, you know, we're a large organization. We have a lot of data, but it sits in departments. And as you think about pulling the thread through the value chain, what you start to see is you see a lot more value through that data. So as I think, for example, about a supply and demand equation, you know, whether it's retail, whether it's hospitality, whether it's energy, doesn't matter what sector, you always have the same question about supply, demand, and forecasting. And so pulling all that data, for example, you know, we have a forecasting model that runs simulations on 15 minutes of usage data across residential and our C&I business. We use weather data from 20 years to start predicting out. We start looking at price curves of what prices look like for power, what prices look like for gas, because we will burn gas to generate power. What does it look like in terms of our hedging strategy? What's it look like in terms of where we think the demand is going to come? And what we build out is a 5-year plan of all of those different things to say, okay, where's our risk? Where's our ability to hedge more? Where are we long? Where are we short? Should we generate more? Should we buy more off the grid? And so that's where you see the power of data and collectively around that value chain, bringing it together. Whereas before it was multiple different business units potentially looking at their own sets of data and doing the I think, and now we've moved to the probability of outcome conversation as opposed to I think gut feel, this is what's going to happen.
Experience Tamer's proven data-centric AI, engineered to speed the discovery, enrichment, and maintenance of the golden records businesses need to accelerate growth. Tamer's expertise in quickly and accurately unifying large amounts of data across disparate sources gets results faster at a lower cost compared to traditional master data management or DIY solutions. Stop wasting time on bad data. Visit www.tamer.com, that's T-A-M-R.com, to see results now.
Yeah, I love that as an example. First, there's a, I think, a little bit of a cult of big data, which is just that more data must be better. I think your insight here, which is really important for people, is it's not just about more data, but it's about kind of insightful, the right data at the right time and the right moment. And that often, very much to your point, cuts across many different data silos. So this idea that as a business, if I think, you know, if I'm thinking about pricing data, to use your example, then I'm just going to go get this narrow sliver of data around pricing versus cost data, you know, in your example, generation data. And your core point here is that, no, it's important to look not just at the volume of data, how much can we gather, but really thinking horizontally across those different silos. And then let's throw the customer dimension in as well, because I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're saying is that one of the important ways of viewing that data is through the lens of the customer, which again goes back to your background and history. But is that fair? Is that right?
That is fair. That is fair. You've got to look at it both ways. One from a customer, what does the customer in perspective, and then look at it from, okay, what does the business do to enable the right experience for the customer?
So thinking from the customer back also helps inform or explain the Vivint acquisition, but also really thinking about, again, not just in the context of, well, more data, but like what's the right data to inform the kinds of choices you make in the business in terms of where you generate, but also the choices that we as consumers make in the home in terms of when we're charging our car, or when we're running our lights, or when we're, what the set point is on our thermostat.
Yeah, that's right, Anthony. And just think about it this way. As I connect the data dots, I have 2 million smart home households that we can understand their usage and their energy usage in terms of smart energy. And then we can scale that to the supply desk. You know, what should the supply desk do? Because I'm now, traditionally, I look at big CNI organizations, the big retailers of this world, and we do demand response with them. But we're taking this to the masses, millions of households, and then doing that again in terms of what does that mean in terms of supply and what should we do in real time or the next day that you can't do without being able to connect those data dots and then be able to scale that to an extent that it makes a material impact on the business.
Yeah. So you mentioned this in passing, but I want to sort of dig into it a little bit. You mentioned predictive models that you've been building. You've discuss this in the context of the five-year plan, but also the next day plan, like what you're going to do next tomorrow. Yeah. I think there's something really interesting here. I think in general, when we talk about AI, we tend to, or there's this, I think, especially recently, a lot of conversation around generative technologies and AI as a way of chatting, I suppose, talking with your home or talking with your energy company. And I'm sure there's use cases there, but you seem to be pulling on, I think, a more traditional view of AI, which is as a way of helping to forecast and manage the business and then using this rich end-to-end data experience you've created. But share with me your view on advanced analytics and AI as it relates to this.
Yeah, and we use a lot of traditional AI. I mean, we've been using AI for many years. But if we go into more of the Gen AI, I think what that is doing is really driving more of that transformation, because we do use Gen AI within our CNI business. So large organizations that will deal with us, and we have Gen AI bots that are actually building out and understanding what our customers need so that they can either auto generate a response from a human being. And in the future, it will be a relationship where it may not need a human being. But we're seeing significant gains in terms of productivity, and even customer engagement scores are going up because, hey, you're calling me. I actually know what you're calling me about. I understand the context and I can give you a much better tailored plan. But what we're seeing is that's not reducing our manpower. It's about actually saying our manpower can do more strategic value added activity and engage in better customer relationships. And let's use Gen AI to do all of the work that we had a whole lot of people just pulling stuff together so we could have that conversation. And what we're seeing is we're seeing a productivity output because we're now talking and being able to service more customers than we have on our CNI side because we got bigger throughput. And I think what that does is also starts our organization to think about transformation, because we should be able to think about not how does Gen AI help improve a business process today, but this technology should be able to transform how we do business in the future. With a lot of our organizations right now, we're actually doing that visioning of 2030. So we're doing the visioning of what does the organization of 2030 look like? And then work backwards in terms of how do we use data, AI, Gen AI technology to enable that. So we're thinking truly transformational. And I think that is going to put us in a good stead. And the exciting thing is also a bit of a worrying thing, because the organization has suddenly realized what we can do and the power we have by thinking in transformative ways, that you see a lot of interest across just about every part of our business unit and department saying, yeah, we need to think about our transformation and what that looks by 2030.
That's interesting. I just want to highlight something you said there is a theme that I think has come up a lot in this podcast, and I think is also has the benefit of some truth, which is a lot of these generative technologies are about taking the kind of boring, repetitive, non-value-added work that we often ask many people to do and getting that off their plate so they can actually spend energy and time focused on the places where their skills and capabilities are most valuable. It sounds like that's been very much your experience. I think I've said this before on the podcast, but when asked, where is a place where we can utilize this technology most effectively, thinking about the places where the people in your organization are doing the most repetitive, boring work is the best place to start putting the technology in place. It's like, what's the most boring thing you do on a day-to-day basis? Let's think about Gen AI there.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, there'll be different areas of the business that will have some of that productivity improvements in terms of needing less to do more. But actually where we're seeing it now is actually increase in terms of our revenue and sales, because we have more opportunity and more bandwidth to do more of that relationship, more of that ability to price, and where we have those incomings, having the capacity to do more. So we're not looking at this right now as a, hey, we're going to shave X percentage off the bottom line. What we're saying is we're actually seeing this as a top line growth opportunity, and we're seeing that as customer experience improvement.
I was going to ask you about cultural hurdles that you've experienced as part of this transformation. It feels like a very negative framing. Sounds like you're actually seeing this as a great opportunity, and to your commentary before, visioning what NRG looks like in 2030, and it sounds like there's actually great engagement with the organization around that effort. So maybe my framing of cultural hurdles is actually exactly the wrong way to think about it, quite the opposite. You're thinking of this as a way of reimagining the business. But share with me, but maybe some of the challenges and opportunities you've seen in getting a business to think very differently about its customers, the way it uses data, and the way each of the parts of the business are thinking about the opportunity space.
And I think one of the challenges that everybody has, and I talk to other organizations, is we've set an expectation that Gen AI is the thing you've got to do. And it's a journey, but when we start that conversation with our leaders and even listening to other organizations, it's not whether it's Gen AI, what are you going to do with it? What is it we want to do? And that's really hard to articulate sometimes.
That's why I always say that's the technology tail wagging the business dog.
Exactly. But the business is asking for, and I've actually been in meetings where I'm trying to get to the business, what's the business question? And the business is coming with a technical answer, which is AI. That's a hard paradigm to shift, but it takes time just to understand that, because people understand that it is transformative. But you've got to understand what you're trying to do with this transformative tool, rather than it's transformative and here's a tool, let's do it. So to your point, yes, absolutely. We don't want the tail wagging the dog. And I think the other part of this is tradition, whether it's Gen AI, data, is that cultural change, because it does have an impact on the things that people do. For the better, you're always, or human behavior will say, well, that's what I've always done. Now you're going to change it. And I don't want to, what do you mean you're going to change the way I do this? And I don't need to do this anymore. I need to do this. So you really have to get your leadership engaged, whichever business unit, to drive down that change. Because this is, again, good analogy, tail wagging dog. This is not a technology or a data implementation. This is a business change. And change management is so critical. And for us, we're actually, you know, we have change management as we do these things. But one of my colleagues is actually building up a COE around change management so that we have it coordinated across the business. We're standing up the Enterprise Transformation Office so we have a consistent way of thinking about architecture, change management, business process improvement, because these are all hard things to do. And what we don't want is it becoming five business units or five business units and functions doing their own things. And then we end up with an absolute mess across a relatively large organization.
No, I mean, I think that's very sound. And again, in thinking about data that cuts across silos, what I hear you saying is there's also an opportunity to think about managing and driving change across silos, across business units, and across the business. Is that a fair way of framing it?
Yeah. I mean, I've been pushing for a transformation office, because what we don't want to do, two things. One, I would not want to do a load of data and technology to do the same thing, but quicker, because I think that's just a waste of time. And then secondly, as we think about the capabilities and think enterprise and raise it up, we really should think about what does that mean across the enterprise. And back to where we started, Anthony, it's connecting the dots. Those dots still need to be connected regardless of what we do in terms of business process. And the power of that business process is the connection of those data dots.
Yep. I think that's a very sound insight. And again, bringing this full circle, building and changing an organization, disrupting a energy company to become this digital business, connecting the data dot from the end consumer that who's turning on and off his or her lights back to the generation capabilities, that's a powerful shift and change. And I think, as you point out, well, setting you up to lead NRG into the 2030s.
Yeah, and I think as long as we keep demonstrating value and driving value and showing the value across the organization, we're going to keep that enthusiasm just for more. If you talk to my CEO, he will say, we're not an energy company. We're more of a technology company than an energy company. And for listeners that think about energy as being kind of this staid industry, and for me coming into it, it is that the rate of transformation and change is truly incredible, even in the 4.5 years I've been here.
Awesome. Well, Dak, thank you so much for joining us on Data Masters. I think there's a lot to take away from both how to transform a business and the important role data plays in that, and how you're casting your eye forward in terms of the future. So thank you for making the time.
Anthony, thank you very much for your time. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Data Masters podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode.